welcome to Just Plain Wrong, the podcast where three Mennonite librarians discuss depictions of Amish, Mennonites, and other plain groups in popular culture. I'm Erin Milanese, your sort of moderator, not really a moderator during our guest episodes, but with me are Tilly and Abby. This episode, we will be interviewing Carrie Neitz, an award-winning science fiction author who wrote Amish Vampires in Space. We'll start with his bio. So Carrie has written 12 speculative novels in print, along with two novellas, a handful of short stories, and a nonfiction book, Fox Tales. Among his writings, Carrie's most talked about is the genre-bending Amish Vampires in Space. We can call it Avis for short. Avis was mentioned on The Tonight Show and in The Washington Post, Library Journal, and Publishers Weekly. Newsweek called it, quote, a welcome departure from the typical Amish fare, end quote. Amish Vampires in Space was followed by two sequels, Amish Werewolves of Space and Amish Zombies from Space, packaged together as the Peril in Plain Space series. Along with writing, Carrie spent more than a decade of his life in software development, first as one of the principal developers for the now mythical Fox software, and then as one of Bill Gates' minions at Microsoft. He is a husband, a father, a technophile, and a movie buff. So, Carrie, we're really excited to talk to you today about your book.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Yeah, thank you.
We're going to start with an activity we put most of our guests through, which is our Amish title generator. So I will share my screen and Tilly will walk you through this funtivity.
If you'd like to prepare, sure. I think we are needing the last digit of a phone number, your birth month, and favorite Amish dessert is really the important indicator.
Favorite Amish treat. There's lots of good ones on there. You know, I didn't get any pumpkin pie Thanksgiving this year, so I'm going to go with that one.
Appropriately enough.
Yeah, I know. It turns out to be vampire. Last digit of phone number. Depends on which number I use. Two, I guess.
And I guess first letter of name, you can do K or N.
That's to do K, I guess.
Okay.
Birth month is August. That's pretty funny. Oh.
Okay, well, maybe when we compiled this, we had absorbed something.
Yes.
Because the result here is the Amish Vampire's Plain Confession in Space. So pretty solid.
So before we get into the interview proper, we wanted to talk a little bit and give a little bit of background on Amish Vampires in Space. Now, we gave a longer summary. We've actually talked about this book before. We discussed it in season 2, episode 2. But if you, as a listener, want to learn more, you can check out that episode or read the book. However, to kind of refresh your memory, here is just a short summary. So Jebediah, an Amish man living on the Amish colony planet of Alabaster, uses some banned tools that he inherited from his ancestors to determine that their planet is in danger. While he ends up being shunned by his community for this, a large cargo ship, spaceship, arrives to rescue the Amish colonists, and Jebediah persuades his community to leave their doomed planet and go into space. Unfortunately for the Amish, the space also has some cargo that contains the sole remains from a mysterious lab disaster, and soon livestock and eventually Amish community members begin to disappear. Jebediah discovers that they are indeed Amish vampires in space and joins with the English members of the surviving crew to try to save his Amish community. Questions of vampire lore, faith, pacifism, community boundaries, and much more fun ensue.
Yes, we didn't want to include any spoilers in our summary. So, all right. So our first question, we'd like you to tell us a little about how the book came to be. So we know that Amish Vampires in Space is probably your most well-known book, but you've written 11 other novels, including the two sequels that we mentioned earlier. So, can you tell us a bit about how Amish Vampires in Space came to exist and how you feel about it as an author 10 years later?
Sure. Yeah, I know, 10 years, huh? Yeah, so my publisher at the time, he used to go to all these writing conferences, and as you, I'm sure you all know, Amish genre, romance genre is big, you know, and every other publisher was looking for Amish romance. And he was a speculative fiction guy. He did fantasy and science fiction, so his joke, the joke he would tell was that the only Amish fiction he's looking for is if it's something like Amish Vampires in Space. So it was like this joke title he came up with. And then kind of over the course of time, he set out this mock cover that he came up with for this, you know, fictional book, Amish Vampires in Space. And he sent it out to all the authors. And you know, we were kind of chuckling about it, looking at it, and, you know, and you can see it in my book, the mock cover, and you kind of see there's a plant in the background, and there's some clearly some Amish folks there, and one of them's in a casket, you know, whatever. And we were talking about it. It's like, you know, someone should write that book, because I think the title alone would intrigue people. And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't sure it was me, because I tend to write sort of hard science fiction. And I was actually working on another series at the time. And, but it, you know, the way writers work, this idea came to me is like, okay, here's how the Amish could get into space and become vampires and not have it be campy. And so I started writing on it, and I got like 30,000 words into it, which is fairly significant. And, I sent him an email and I said, hey, guess what I'm doing. And when he got done laughing, he said, well, if it's any good, I'll publish it. So, you know, I finished it up. It was about 130 some thousand words total, and sent it to him, and he liked it. And the rest is kind of history. So that's how it became a book. So yeah. And then of course it had, quite a bit of buzz, and yeah, it was been a kind of a saga since then, but yes, definitely my most well-known book. And it seemingly has kind of an evergreen quality, and it will always every once in a while show up on somebody's list or topic of somebody's discussion. And so, you know, I'll see some sales and get some comments and whatever. So yeah.
Yeah. It gets mentioned on Twitter a lot. Like, yeah. As someone who sort of monitors what Skitty talked about with Amish fiction on Twitter, I feel like Amish Vampires in Space is like almost a daily occurrence.
Yeah. There for the longest time, it seemed like it would show up on cover art list, you know, like, oh, this crazy cover, you know. Mm-hmm. But now, yeah, it's more just the book and the content itself people talk about. Yeah. So,
but are you still pleased with the reception all these years later, or do you kind of wish that people would pick up some of your other books too?
Yeah. No, I'm definitely still pleased with it. No fiction author will regret having a book that kind of catches on and gets buzz and gets that kind of mention. You know, it really has been an interesting journey. That the other part of, I think one of your questions you were going to lead into is kind of how it got mentioned later. And the interesting part of that story, so it got published in like September, but in December, the publishing house got sold. And it was sold. And I was one of the first people to find out, because it was sold to a guy who had connections to the Amish romance genre. Like he was a literary agent, and he knew a lot of those authors. And so one of the books he didn't want as part of the sale was mine. So, yeah. So I had this book that had all this buzz and, you know, being talked about and bought, you know, lots of people buying it. And over Christmas time, I had to turn it into an indie published book. So, you know, that sort of happened in the 2 weeks over Christmas. My wife is still a little bitter about that, you know, but I've gotten over it. And so that happened. And by January, it was an indie published book, and most people didn't know really. There's no real difference. I mean, it mostly gets purchased through Amazon anyway. So in the course of time, you know, there's more buzz and more interviews. And then I think it was about March, I had some friends who sent me some typos they found. And it's a big book. You're gonna have some of that. And so I decided to make the change to update the print format. And used to be the case that when you did that, I published through CreateSpace back then, that you had to take the book off sale while you're making those changes. So, and then like you submit your print format, and then elves in another country somewhere would like check it over. And then in the morning, the next morning, you'd find out if they had problems with it or not. And so I had like 3 or 4 days of just kind of trying to get through this process with the elves. And then I think Tuesday morning, I got it I got it, so it was back on sale. That the following night, I found out, because like actually the next morning I got up, checked Facebook, and one of my writing friends said, "How was it to be on the Tonight Show last night?" And I was like, "What?" Oh, and it turned out Jimmy Fallon had mentioned Amish Vampires in Space in the Tonight Show that night, and you know, just in the nick of time, I had managed to get it back for sale. You know? And so, yeah, so. And then there was this huge buzz, and you mentioned Twitter. I was new to Twitter at the time, but I would be searching for Amish Vampires in Space just to see people talking about it. And it, I counted, you know, 7 different languages, 12 different countries. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just kind of this around the world. You see, you know, blah, 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 Amish Vampire Space, and you knew they were what they were talking about. So just a 5-second mention, you know, and mm-hmm. sort of became this worldwide phenomenon for a little bit anyway. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely a cool thing and the nick of time, you know, and sort of mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. the timing of things. So it's very cool.
Well, that answers some of our questions ahead of us asking them, actually, about self-publishing. But tangential to that, when you're talking about the state of publishing and the continued recruitment of authors to write Amish romance in particular, have you continued to sense that? Have you ever sampled any Amish romance for yourself to see what it is?
I don't read a lot of romance, and I'm definitely a science fiction guy, and mm-hmm. I'm sort of in the time of my career where a lot of what I'm reading these days are books by peers who are hoping to get blurbs and recommendations mm-hmm. or, you know, just input. So that's kind of where a lot of my free reading time goes, but yes, I think it's still, I think Amish romance is still a thing, and it's amazing it's still a thing, you know, for so long, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't show signs of burning out.
I had a friend once who was trying to connect me with an agent, and one of the first things the agent asked me is if I would consider writing Amish romance, you know, so I transitioned to that. I'm like, yeah, it's just not me. This is not my jam, you know? So yeah. I have nothing against it I'm just not a romance guy. So,
well, that kind of leads into a little bit, kind of the next question is, obviously you had to, I mean, I'm not sure how much knowledge you had about the Amish before you wrote your book, but I was just kind of curious if you did any kind of research or how you approached that in terms of creating the book.
Going into it is I definitely wanted to research enough to kind of, obviously it's not a perfect representation of Amish society, but at least make it believable, you know, mm-hmm. just like with the science fiction, I want enough hard science to kind of make it believable. And mm-hmm. so I read John Hostetler's book about Amish society, you know, mm-hmm. dug into that one. That was one that was recommended to me. And I have an actually Amish romance author who kind of proofread it for me too, just, you know, from their knowledge, what they knew about, you know, Amish society. And, you know, and I grew up on a farm. So, mm-hmm. you know, I obviously we used gas powered vehicles, but, you know, I know what it's like to hoe a field or take care of animals. And I did all that, you know, so mm-hmm. there are Amish communities not that far from where I live. You know, actually mm-hmm. my wife and I, for our last anniversary went to Amish country. So, you know, that was kind of fun.
Nice.
Yeah. Stayed in a hotel. It was like a honeycomb. So it was kind of a cool thing.
So. Well, the next couple of questions, we're going to transition into a couple of questions specific to the book content. The first, I don't know if you've listened to our other episodes on vampires, but Tilly has a very specific thing that she gets hung up with when it comes to vampire lore, and she doesn't feel like it was addressed in your text, so she wants to ask you now.
I'm a little sheepish about it. This comes from binge watching all of Buffy and Angel and having too much of a focus on the importance of souls. And does anyone address whether or not vampires have souls? And one of the things that we ran into, at least one of the last Amish vampire things we read, was a comic book where there were Amish vampires who are attacking a farmer who was also a shark.
Okay.
It's called Shark Farmer. And they behave very much like zombies, and they are eventually killed, and okay. Shark Farmer gets in a combine and runs them over. Yeah. And he's clearly not worried about souls. And so this is a rambling way of me saying, did you consider adding that element into the dialogue when you were having your characters face this moral conundrum about defending themselves and potentially leaving non-resistance behind to take yes. action against
yes.
These vampires?
Yeah. And yes. And that, you know, that was definitely one of the struggles is, are they still human? Or, you know, what are we mm-hmm. fighting? Because obviously fighting animals, it's not as big a deal. Right. And, you know, it's a good question. Like, from my perspective, they're science fiction vampires, you know, so there's more of a infection element, you know, so I would assume that they had souls, you know, it definitely wasn't something that I explored that deeply. However, if you pay attention to the story, you'll notice that a lot of the folks who become vampires are sort of on this moral slide, you know, a little bit like they're already a bit, you know.
Yeah, the brighter color clothing.
They've kind of got their vices, like, you know, like one character, Abraham, he's definitely more about his things and his property and his, you know, I'm losing all this when we're leaving. And you know, and he's the one that kind of bans Jebediah from getting on the shuttle at the end, you know, in the mm-hmm. middle story there. And so, you know, and then you have these young ladies who are, you know, kind of walking outside of the lines a little bit, and then they end up being sort of part of the vampire troop. So, you know, it's subtle, but there's definitely this, yeah, there's kind of a moral slide going on, even though mm-hmm. it's kind of a science fiction story, you know. So
I definitely noticed that was interesting, like kind of in the phase of the book that was I hadn't quite figured out what was going on, but this like growing realization. I think there's like a scene where Samuel, the more conservative bishop. Is kind of like looking around and seeing like his community is kind of not in tatters, but like they're making decisions that no longer really fit like with
the community the kind of community that he's used to. You know, it's this very rebellious sort of got a new leader, you know, and so. I mean, there's definitely a vein of that, so to speak, in there, you know, and purposefully, you know.
Yeah. Well, that kind of, so a connected kind of question about that, like one of the things that was interesting is how those decisions about how to depict the Amish beliefs around non-resistance and pacifism and how you had your characters kind of struggle with that, especially like Jebediah and some of, and kind of the conflict specifically with Samuel and some of the other people as they were trying to figure out how to, you know, do we fight? How do we fight? What is okay? What is not okay? I didn't know if you want to just like talk a little bit about it or something. That's something that fascinated me a little bit.
Yeah. I thought that was one of the kind of the most interesting conflicts to kind of explore, right? It was like, okay, you have the Amish with the non-resistance and then they encounter beings that they're the complete opposite way. They're completely selfish. It's completely about domination, you know, and I thought that was a kind of interesting. And also, you know, at what point, you know, you're defending your family. At what point does that, you know, play into the, and obviously for Jebediah, it does, like, you know, that's kind of the tipping point for him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's when I was younger, I answered questions for gotquestions.com, which is like the Campus Crusade kind of college-oriented site. And one of the questions I got once was from someone considering whether they wanted to be in the military or not, and asking a question, you know, could I be a Christian and do that? You know, and so it sort of forced me to research what I felt about that and okay, how could you defend it one way or the other, you know? And so some of that research sort of worked its way into the book. You know, you know, folks might not agree with it, but it's, you know, it was research. Like it was, okay, mm-hmm. How did Christ treat soldiers? You know, did he tell them to leave what they were doing or whatever? And so, yeah, so that's kind of where that came from, you know, mm-hmm. that makes sense. So my father was in the service and my wife's grandfather was actually a three-star general, you know, so yeah, this is something that then they also were great Christian men, you know, like I respect them. So yeah, it was just something for me to kind of explore too. Authors get to do that in their books. You know, that's what we do. So
Well, and you got to explore in a, you know, pretty unique setting. Right, so
right. Good question.
So that kind of takes us to our next question, if I could steal it from Aaron.
Sure.
Which is, what do you want to explore next? What are you writing now?
Okay. So I just finished over the summer. I finished it's like a robotic fiction. And it was just kind of this idea that came from, it's called Lost Bits. And it's this idea that came from search around cabinets here in the house. And I found this stack of e-readers, you know, that are now my kids no longer use. I was like, oh, that's kind of sad. You know, these things that have been part of our life for a period of time, they're now kind of discarded. And so that book follows, it's like, what if that happened to a robot? And so it sort of follows this robot who wakes up in a garbage dump and kind of goes looking for his family. You know, so it's sort of this other robots sort of join him along the way. So it's a little bit of Wizard of Oz, a little bit of, you know, searching for his human family, you know, so it's kind of a fun thing. But and then another thing I've been working on lately is I've written some novels for a gaming company, and they center. Okay. So this gaming system has been around since like the 80s and started out as a by mail game. So you would write out, it's a space, kind of a Star Wars type game, but you would write out your moves and then send them in, and the computer would figure out from everybody's stuff that was sent in, who, you know, what, who's winning what or whatever. And it grew to have like 10,000 people playing this mail-in game. Well, they're working on an online multiplayer massive game. But in the meantime, they wanted authors to write stories in that universe. So, and since it's been around since the 80s, it has this like giant wiki of information. You know? And so I've done a little bit of that, but all my stories center around man-sized spacefaring rats. So like crews of rats, and the last one I had published centered around a crew that ended up being in the Battle of Waterloo. Like they ended up on Earth during the Battle of Waterloo and kind of had soldiers coming at them from all sides. They just wanted to fill their hold with cheese and wine and get out of there. But, you know, this battle is going on. So, but now I'm working on another one that's a little more, are you familiar with the show Firefly? You know, it's kind of,
yes.
It's more like Firefly, but with man-sized rats, you know,
sounds fun.
Yeah, it is fun, and it's kind of escapism, and, you know, you can kind of do whatever you want. So,
We had a book recently we reviewed called Z Kyoter versus the Singularity that did not have man-sized rats, but had intelligent speaking rats.
Rat size, you mean? But they
yeah.
Talk. Yeah. 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 Mine are man-sized, but yeah, they talk. So yeah, that's cool.
Well, I'm going to throw in an extra question since we have a little time. So I guess I'm curious. So after the book came out, we've heard about the reception by The Tonight Show. Did you hear from any Mennonites or Amish people after the book came out? Did you get any critique from them or any feedback? Or are we like the first Mennonites you've talked to?
You know, I expected more. The biggest critiques actually came from folks who weren't Amish or Mennonites, but they were like people who either wrote Amish romance and they thought I should be writing anything to do with the Amish because I wasn't Amish. Or even though they weren't Amish either.
I was going to say that's weird because,
you know, writers, I'm writing about rats right now. I'm not a rat, you know, not a lot, you know, or it occasionally be someone who had been Amish and now are kind of defending the Amish, you know, but again, I'm writing science fiction here. You know, I don't expect to be the perfect representation of the Amish today. It's an Amish from like 500 years from now, you know? So there's a little bit of, I need a little grace there, I guess. So, and actually then I find out on occasion that there is kind of a, like before Amish Werewolves came out, as when I was in the process of writing it, I got email from a librarian in Shipshewana, which is the heart of Amish country in Indiana, and it was very kind of guardedly worded, but she was like, we have some patrons who wonder if you're going to come out with another Amish book. They really want to know what happens to the children. And I was like, yeah, that's what I'm writing right now. So it's the perfect timing. But, you know, the way it was worded, I kind of got the feeling is these might actually be Amish readers, you know, so, which is cool. I mean, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, it should be fun.
Shipshawana, so, that you know, is very possible.
Well, I was going to say, there's the Newsweek praise for your book said that it's a welcome departure from typical Amish fiction. And having been to the Shipshawana library, and we're just next door where I live.
Okay, great. Yeah.
And seeing the shelves upon shelves of bonnet romance, I can imagine that if someone were to stumble on your book, they'd probably want.
I'll grab
to
that.
Continue it.
I was surprised when we went to Amish country this last year, how much Amish romance I found there. You know, I didn't realize that the Amish read it as much as apparently they do, you know, like, because it clearly was on every bookshelf and every store I went to,
Well, this was really fun getting to hear a little bit about how this book came to be and your writing process. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you and your books if they want to buy them?
Sure. Most of them are available on Amazon, but my website is neets.com will work, N-I-E-T-Z, or carrieneets.com, either one. And I'm on Facebook and Twitter and MeWe and Instagram too. So look me up. If you look for Amish Vampires in Space, you'll find me. So
and I'll say he's very good on Twitter. That is how this whole episode came to be, is we were doing some tweeting and I DM'd Carrie via the podcast account and said, hey, would you ever come on our podcast? So So if you have more, if you have individual questions about the book, you can always find him there. Thank you, Carrie, so much for joining us today. This was really fun.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks for listening to this week's discussion with Carrie Neets, author of the Peril in Plain Space Trilogy, Amish Vampires in Space, Amish Werewolves of Space, and Amish Zombies from Space. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the field of publishing, the Perils in Plain Space Trilogy, as well as your recommendations, corrections, and other musings. Next week, we will be discussing the book Women Talking by Miriam Taves, and we will be covering the movie in a separate episode a few weeks later. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram at Plain Wrong Pod, or email us at plainwrongpod@gmail.com. If you'd like to help support the podcast financially, we have merch for sale at TeePublic and a Patreon that you can join. And we always appreciate when you leave reviews and subscribe, as that is how other people learn that this podcast exists. Thanks for tuning in.